Good morning and welcome to the KGNT Golden Spread Agribusiness News Hour. It's Friday, one of our favorite days of the week, and that means also we get to talk a little Texas corn. Hear from the Texas corn producers this morning. As always, we've got one of our favorites, Mr. David Gibson, joining us. Mr. Gibson, how are you doing, man?
Man, we're doing good, David. Just sitting here with a lot of farmers in the field harvesting and looking out and seeing dry weather returning and kind of anxious about getting moisture so we'll can start preparing for next year. It's a eternal cycle.
I know it. It's a cycle of life. And that's what we can jump into right now. We're looking at harvest and looking at grains and silage and that sort of stuff. Have you got an update on what's happening out in the fields right now?
Well, we're getting well along towards completion of our silage harvest. I think over halfway done and maybe even a little more than that in some locations, which this year we've seen a lot of our corn go to silage in order for our dairies and feed yards. So it's been a very busy time the last few weeks, and we'll continue to be that way. And just this past week, we've seen quite a bit of reports of folks starting some grain harvest. So busy time of the year and harvesting these crops. It's not been the most pleasant story we've heard on what some of our production's been. This hot, dry summer that we had certainly took its toll on some of our production.
Yeah, most definitely. And a lot of, like you were saying, Mr. Gibbs, there's a lot of factors that go into the producer, and most of them they don't control. I know a couple of weeks ago we were looking at that rail strike and what that could have potentially meant. Would that have been a devastating issue for guys getting ready to harvest, getting ready to wrap up their year this year, if that strike went through?
Well, if we had seen that strike, you know, we've already talked about input and supply chain problems. That would have just amplified it. If that would have occurred. We're seeing some impact even of the fact that the rail service has not been able to fulfill all their labor needs and everything that was involved somewhat in the strike talks and they've been talking about. But, you know, just the freight rates for our grains moving has gone up. The intermodal moving consumer goods is paying them more money. So getting some of our supplies and things in here, getting our goods shipped out, we're seeing those increased costs, and it's costing our farmers more for things they're needing to buy that's moving. And at the end of the day, it's really hitting the consumers and what it's costing, you know, for goods that consumers are buying off of those freight rates. And if the rail had shut down, you know, when during COVID we saw some empty shelves in the grocery stores. We would have seen empty shelves not only in grocery stores, but in the electronic goods and many of the other things out there that all consumers look at. So keeping the rail up and running, it's important across the board, and even into the agriculture world, it is very important to keep the rail system operating, and we need it running at full capacity.
Yeah, most definitely. And we've seen, like you were saying, Mr. Gibson, about after the pandemic, it's been tough for companies to find employees. And we know over-the-road drivers, truckers, there's been issues with that, finding people with CDLs. Wholeheartedly, if that railroad strike goes through, we grind right back to a halt of like 2020 again.
It was just a critical thing that it get settled, and we were certainly all breathed a sigh of relief when we saw that, you know, they'd reached an agreement. We hope that continues to work out and we can keep that rail operating for multiple reasons for all of us on the farms and everyone in the cities.
Most definitely. I mean, you were just talking about the profit margins and how it affects each end of the chain. The producer and then the consumer seem like they bear the brunt of whatever happens in the middle there between the middleman, between transportation, between raw goods. There's another issue that's going to hit home right now. With those costs skyrocketing, The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has taken another swing. They're going back at atrazine again. You were saying earlier, Mr. Gibson, 1999, when you first came into this, it was on the table. Here we go in 2022, and we're still fighting that battle.
That's right, David. It's when I first began here in the fall of 1999, the first meeting I went to in Washington, we were working on atrazine and maintaining the label. And here we are 23 years later, still on the table. Comments are open. We need growers to get on our website, wherever they find a way to make comments to EPA about the importance of atrazine, what they're doing, make it safe. Get those in EPA by October 7th. It's just, it's critical. You know, over 70 million of our corn acres of the 90 million in the U.S. has some form of atrazine applied every year. Here in Texas, we're probably closer to 90%, 95% of our acres have some form of atrazine used for as a herbicide, which is just critical to being able to produce a crop and to produce what we need. So we really need our farmers to engage, get online, make those comments to EPA, and get it done before October 7th.
If the EPA has its way, or if the Green New Deal folks or whatever get their way, how severely? I mean, there's producers who've been using this herbicide for 60 years. How devastating would it be to the bottom line of these producers?
Well, what it would immediately do is just increase what the producers having to pay for herbicides in order to control weeds in their crop. And people say, well, why is that important? Weeds take water. Mm-hmm. Water's critical. We don't have an abundance of water here in our part of the world, so that impacts our potential for production and producing an adequate supply of food. Whenever we get shortages of food supply, that's critical for everyone out there, and it's sure critical on the farm when we got to do anything to raise cost of production.
Yeah.
So it would impact us statewide immensely if we lose that product. And even if we don't lose it, and they impact some of the new rules for application, or they're wanting us to reduce rates, not put it out if there's a chance of a runoff rain. There's just some of those requirements that for our part of the world are just totally misplaced. That's not what our issues are, but they're making this one size for the U.S. fit all of us.
Yeah.
And we're not located next to the Mississippi River.
Right.
We don't have the runoff problems. And we certainly can't predict our rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just pieces of it that really impacts us in so many ways. And we, as I said, we need growers being sure they send their comments in as we're working on this issue once again.
Yeah, it's on the very front line of the Texas Corn Producers website, the fight to re-register atrazine. You've got a chance to have your voice heard and speak up. There's a link there. You can submit your comments to the EPA now. You can even click and sign the petition. But we were talking earlier, Mr. Gibson, about as the shift changes, we get more people moving, especially in our part of the world, in Texas, from California, different parts of the country, fighting the regulations they're having to face to make a living, and they're coming here. It seems our urban areas are growing at a crazy pace, and the people who represent us in these state houses and in the national house has changed, and you said it right there that they're not on the ground. They don't know. You can't piecemeal this deal.
Yeah.
What works in Missouri won't work here, will it?
No, not. And, you know, kind of what we talked a little about off air was just some of the looking at the upcoming farm bill. And we've got an election coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We've already seen one of the things, and this was an interesting topic on Thursday. I've participated in a call, and this is primarily with folks outside of the agriculture realm talking about the upcoming farm bill. They're talking about conservation, green farming and nutrition. And there was no real talk about, they were talking about why, about the price of food going up. And so we got to put more money into nutrition, more money into nutrition. These areas outside of the realm of production ag aren't taking into account that the small percent of our value of the corn in a box of cornflakes is about 12 cents to make one box of cornflakes. Box of cornflakes are going up more because the cost of manufacturing, cost of transportation, cost of their marketing. It's not because of what the farmers are getting. It's all of those middle things between the kernel of corn until it's in that box of cornflakes is really going up. So we're going to put more money into nutrition, and that's not really passing back down out to ensure that we're producing an adequate amount of the raw product to make those foods. And that's a concern, and it's just interesting hearing these folks from Washington, D.C., and New York, and Boston, and high urban centers talking about what was going to be important in the Farm Bill, and there's no real talk with them about it. So we look now at the election, and we see this projection that more we're going to see some Democratic seats lost in some rural areas that these members have been serving on the Ag Committee. That gets concerning for the makeup of our committees in D.C. I know Representative Jackson's looking to get on as a Republican, but we've got in Illinois, they combined two districts that two of those districts were real high ag areas, but they got combined, so we're going to lose a Democratic member that was representing an ag area, and that's happening in multiple of the states. And when that does, that's going to put more urban members on the ag committees. Yeah. Yeah. And whenever that happens, then you've got more of that talk about that's outside of production realm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that gets to be concerning as we look at where our Farm Bill may go in the future, because the committee makeup of the members of the, especially in the House of Representatives, is going to be critical. And if we get more urban members on there, and nutrition is very important.
Yeah.
We got to have it, but we've still got to produce that raw product in order to meet those nutritional needs. So we see a lot of concern kind of just looking this election, and then looking, this Farm Bill, and then the future Farm Bills of how we're going to be able to actually maintain the production of the raw products to make those food products. Yeah. So it's going to be, it's a lot of outside influences entering into this. And, you know, we're carrying the message of our farmers and what they're needing, but our voice is diminishing here in Texas, and it's diminishing, you know, on a national basis, just with the small amount of producers we have still left that's producing all the food that's consumed.
The thing that you look at, you yourself, your family, you've been in this business a while. It's a generational thing. The best conservator of that land is the people who've been on it the longest. You know what it needs. You know what it needs to come back next year to produce a crop. And like I said, it worries me when you get someone who the last time they grew a seed was probably in a second grade experiment at elementary school, and now you want to dictate, or you want to tell that man who's been taking care of that land for, you know, in his family for 100 years, well, you're wrong doing it that way, and you need to, it just doesn't make sense to me sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're all open for improvements. Mm-hmm. We're all looking for improvements. Farmers have done that since the start of time, and we're all about that, but we're just becoming, we've got more people that are two and three and four generations away from the land that don't realize what's being done. They don't know. They're being influenced by some outside influencers, and it's very concerning. I mean, it's just like here in Texas, we've had a big push with some federal dollars from USDA going to urban gardens. Well, that's all well and good, and I appreciate their efforts, but urban gardens aren't going to be able to feed that whole urban area. There's a big push in Dallas. They're not going to be able to produce enough food in an urban garden setting to feed the city of Dallas.
No.
But it's very good for the local community that participates and puts that nutrition on those tables. Mm-hmm. But we've still got to have our commercial agriculture in order to produce enough food to feed the U.S. and the world.
And like we were talking earlier with the silage and other things, it's not just that corn box of cornflakes. The product you produce, it has many avenues. It's used in many different levels and different things. And a crimp or a stop in the hose anywhere along that chain could be devastating for a producer, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Whenever we look at the whole big picture, we need everything operating at full speed in order to produce, be able to be economically viable and produce the products that are needed in an ample supply to feed us here in the U.S. And, you know, we are still the breadbasket of the world.
Yeah, we still are. We feed the whole world here. Last thing before I let you get out of here, Mr. Gibson, we talked about the atrazine. We talked about the farm bill ahead. You talked about you can go to the Texas Corn website and you can put your information in what you think about atrazine and what we need to do and how this is a benefit for the farmers. Can you tell the folks just a little bit or speak to them a little bit about advocacy, knowing who you vote for, knowing what's voting for and how it affects ag? Why is it important you get that feedback from the producers and the common man, the consumer?
Yeah, well, you know, and David, we encourage our members. We've encouraged the public when we've talked with y'all. Get out and meet your legislators. Mm-hmm. Knowing your state representative or your representative that goes to D.C., knowing your state senator, knowing our U.S. senators, you may not get to know them on the full first name basis, but go and meet them and be sure and talk to them. Build a dialogue. Sending in emails to their offices that are important. It's just critical because there's people doing that. I have to relate to a hearing a few years ago in Austin. We had a topic come up, had a House member on the House Ag Committee go to making certain set of comments. So I come home and I wonder where he got his information. He mentioned he got it on Facebook.
Oh, God.
We went to his Facebook page. We found the comments he mentioned. They were sent to him by people from California.
Oh, Lord.
So it's important that people from Ronnie Jackson's district, Fort Price's district, whoever, they're sending comments to them about what pertains to us right here.
Mm-hmm.
And be sure you do that. Like I said, go to their town hall meetings. There's a lot of campaign events going on. Go and talk to them. Ask them questions. See how they stand on issues that's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a key thing. And I just know in a lot of cases, I go to a lot of those events, the vast majority of our folks don't go and participate, mm-hmm. and I encourage them to.
That's it. You have to be a part of the system if you want to enact change. You have to know what's going on. You can't rely on somebody else telling you the scoop. And we rely on this part of the country. It's a chain. It affects the producer. If he doesn't have a good year, if his costs are too high for him to produce a crop, guess what? He's not buying new equipment this year. He's not buying a new pickup. He's not doing certain things, and that is a trickle-down into our economy. And we have to look at the big picture, and we have to be a voice and stand up. And Texas corn producers, they do that. And you can go to their website, texascorn.org. Check out that atrazine story. It will really open your eyes to some things and what the EPA is trying to change and do and how it could affect us and our area down the line. So you want to check that out. All the latest information. They've got some classes coming up. You want to check the calendar on that. And you like to say, as we head in, it's a never-ending cycle. They're wrapping up harvest, and a day later they'll be getting ready to go back out, won't they, Mr. Gibson?
That's right. We've already got folks in South Texas. Mm-hmm. We work statewide that are doing land preparation and putting out some of their fertilizer needs already and doing things to start next year, and that'll follow just immediately behind this harvest for us. It's a cycle that continues year-round.
Bang, so, bang.
Bang, bang. That's life out on the farm. It just keeps on turning.
That's it. Yeah. Well, we appreciate all the hard work you guys do over at Texas Corn and all the producers out there. We appreciate what you do. It's very important to the lifeblood of America. I say it all the time. People look at me strange when I say it. If the American farm disappears from the landscape, then America disappears from the landscape. It goes part and parcel, hand in hand, about the producers, the products they produce, and the great country we have. Go to texascorn.org for more information. Every Friday, we sit down and we talk Texas corn. Also, don't forget, we've expanded our ag program here at KGNC. We've got programs on Saturday, on Sunday. We have a new ag wrap-up at 9:30 on Sunday nights on KGNC. Bryce Hudson has started the 6 p.m. ag update. You can hear these interviews on our website, kgncnewsnow.com. We'll have a link about that atrazine on our website. You can go straight to it and help out the Texas corn producers. Mr. Gibson, as always, thank you, sir. We appreciate you.
You bet. Thank you, David.
That's it for today's show. We'll see you bright and early on Monday morning right here on KGNC.